All right. Welcome to the Michael Slate Show. I'm your host, Michael Slate, and we have a very special show for you today. If you've been paying attention to what's going on in the world, you know that on August 14th, Egyptian government security forces launched a bloodbath against supporters of Mohamed Morsi. The numbers of those killed through the police assault, helicopter, sniper, and bulldozer attacks may be as high as 2,000. Thousands were injured, and the military is threatening even further slaughter. This vicious repression is totally unjust and must be condemned. This was, in fact, a coup, and it served the larger interests of the U.S. imperialists. The Obama administration has continued to send military aid to Egypt. U.S. imperialism has blood on its hands, and nothing good can come of this for the great majority of the Egyptian people. This talk that you're going to be listening to today, this talk by Raymond Latta, provides background analysis and orientation for understanding what has been happening in Egypt and the real revolutionary alternative that is needed. Raymond Latta is a political economist and advocate for Babavakian's New Synthesis of Communism. He writes for Revolution Newspaper, and he's the author of America in Decline. He also leads the website www.thisiscommunism.org. So without any further ado, let's jump into the talk by Raymond Latta, and it was given at Revolution Books in New York City just a few days ago.
I want to thank Revolution Books for hosting this program on the recent events in Egypt. Big and monumental questions are getting posed. What did the ouster of the government of Mohamed Morsi actually represent? What is the objective role of the Egyptian military in Egyptian society and in relationship to Western imperialism? How is it that people who took to the streets in their millions, many with all kinds of creative energies and hatred of oppression, can still become unleashed for reactionary ends? There's a very important article on revcom.us with the provocative title, Millions of People Can Be Wrong. This is something that is to be squarely confronted. You see, we have to examine social reality deeply in order to understand what has been happening in Egypt, and we have to be applying the most advanced understanding of why the world is the way it is and how it can be transformed in order to understand what it's going to take if there's going to be genuine emancipation. Now, I'll be making four core arguments. First, a reactionary coup took place at the end of June, and nothing good can come of this for the people. This was not people power in action. The leading and determining force behind this coup was the Egyptian military that has been built up, trained, and funded by U.S. imperialism for decades. These armed forces protect the strategic interests of Western, and in particular, U.S. imperialism. Second, the overthrown government of Mohamed Morsi was not a vehicle for a radical social change. The Morsi government was an extension of the political, economic, and social system that exploits and oppresses the great majority of the Egyptian people. At the same time, the Muslim Brotherhood was using its electoral victory to reorganize society on a religious foundation. Now, as I speak, it's the evening of August 14th, government security forces have carried out a bloody crackdown against supporters of Morsi in Cairo and throughout the country. It is not clear exactly how many have been killed, but there are estimates in the high hundreds right now. There is a slaughter that's taking place. This repression must be forthrightly condemned. It must be opposed. The military is not acting on behalf of some progressive interest. It is moving against a rival oppressive force. And it must be very, very soberly confronted what is happening here. As I said, the military is not acting on behalf of some progressive interests. It is moving against a rival oppressive force. And the country may be lunging into a reactionary civil war. This is not clear. But what is clear is that the government in power in Egypt, this military government, is using weapons supplied by U.S. imperialism to carry out this vicious repression. It is using weapons supplied by the same government that has insisted that a coup did not take place, and in declaring that, enabled this government to continue receiving huge amounts of military aid from the United States. The generals are now in direct control of the state. And they are, as I said, carrying out this very vicious repression. The U.S., which backed this coup, does not have direct and immediate control over what is happening. So it is a very difficult situation for U.S. imperialism, even as it has been the chief backer of this coup. And this is creating new problems and difficulties for U.S. imperialism. And this is something that I'll return to. And this brings me to the third point, the third core argument that I'm going to be making. The clash in Egyptian society between the Islamic forces and the section of people supporting them on the one side, and the military and the section of people supporting them on the other, is an expression of the clash, as Bob Avakian has described it, between two outmoded forces contending in the world. The historically outmoded strata among colonized and oppressed humanity, expressed in a concentrated way through Islamic fundamentalism, and the historically outmoded ruling strata of the imperialist system. The fourth core argument is that it is not the case that the only choice before the people of Egypt and the world is to side with one reactionary outmoded or another. There is another way. Communist revolution is re-envisioned by Bob Avakian. This is the road of breaking free of imperialist domination as part of the revolution to uproot all exploitation and oppression, to emancipate all of humanity, and to safeguard the planet for current and future generations. Now, I want to start by going back to the overthrow of the Mubarak regime in February 2011, what has come to be known as the Arab Spring. A new generation of youth announced that the normal workings of society were unacceptable. Millions of people defied, stood up to, and rose up against a brutal, stifling, and decrepit ruling order headed by Hosni Mubarak. And this hated regime was toppled. This was not supposed to happen in Egypt. It was said that Mubarak was too strong, that the population had become too cowed by and habituated to oppressive rule. I remember hearing a young poet in Tahrir Square say the barrier of fear had been breached. It was contagious and it cut across a wide swath of society. Lawyers, doctors, and other professionals joined the youth, sections of the urban poor, people from the arts and intellectual life.
This is the Michael Slate Show, and you're listening today to a speech given by political economist Raymond Latta. Latta is also an advocate for Bob Avakian's new synthesis of communism. He writes for Revolution Newspaper, and he leads the website thisiscommunism.org.
The revolt of February 2011 demonstrated that there is no permanent necessity to the existing conditions and structures under which the great majority of humanity lives and suffers. And it was tremendously inspiring to oppressed people and people everywhere who yearn for an end of oppression, for a better world. The sparks of revolt spread. But this revolt did not become a revolution. Let me repeat. This revolt did not become a revolution. Mubarak was forced to step down, but the same basic forces that have ruled over and exploited the Egyptian people remained in power. The same military that had been the backbone of the old regime and that is a highly valued asset of the U.S. remained in charge. The profound economic, political, social, and ideological contradictions that gave rise to the Arab Spring, these contradictions have not been resolved. Fact one, Egypt remains a prisoner of the imperialist world market. By this I mean that Egypt's economic structure is dependent on and shaped by foreign capital, by international loans, and Egypt's subordinate integration into the world imperialist economy. Much of the investment capital, the foreign investment capital entering into Egypt, is concentrated in financial services and natural gas, sectors that generate few jobs. The Egyptian state has promoted the development of profitable export sectors, especially cotton goods. Foreign domination has given rise to rampant and rapacious land speculation and to bloated investment in tourism. The Egyptian military is in the thick of it all. It controls 40% of the Egyptian economy. The whole path of development has diverted resources from agriculture. The peasantry has been pressed harder and is losing land to government-favored developers and landholding elites. A large part of the population in the cities and countryside has been displaced from traditional agriculture, but is not integrated into the formal economy. Egypt has favorable agricultural resources and the potential to develop a sustainable agriculture, but it depends on the world market to meet its food needs. Egypt is the largest importer of wheat in the world. And globalization has made Egypt vulnerable to jolts in the world economy, like sudden spikes in food prices. There's chaotic urbanization. Cairo has some 18 million residents, and half of its population lives in shanty towns and in makeshift self-built neighborhoods that lack basic social services. Diseases like smallpox and tuberculosis have become epidemic again. The region's ecosystems are severely stressed. The water level of the Nile is declining. Soil fertility is degraded by pollution. Agricultural land is being lost to urbanization and desert winds. Fragile coral reefs and marine habitats are under relentless pressure. A tiny stratum of Egypt's wealthy has benefited, while poverty and squalor have spread. 40% of Egypt's population lives at or below the poverty level. I'm talking about families subsisting on $2 a day. The unemployment rate for young people is 75%. And think about it, some 30% of Egypt's university graduates cannot find work. Women, one half of humanity, are subordinated in every sphere of Egyptian society, in the countryside, weighed down by oppressive tradition and custom, in the cities, having to face the dehumanizing pressures of Islamization and the degrading objectification of Western-style progress. Egypt is a society where female genital mutilation is formally illegal, but Egypt continues to have one of the highest rates of female genital mutilation in the world. Egypt is a society where there's a pandemic of rape and sexual violence, and where the police and army specialize in humiliating female protesters. General Sisi, the head of the same Supreme Council of the Armed Forces that had been hailed a month ago for acting on the people's demands, is the same general who defended the virginity tests conducted by the military against arrested female protesters in 2011, punished because they had spent the night with male demonstrators. Again, we must take the full measure of the situation after Mubarak was forced from power. The basic and defining oppressive and exploiting relations of society have remained intact. There has been no revolution in Egypt. Fact two, the repressive neocolonial Egyptian state remains intact. The state serves the interest of imperialism and the dictatorship of the exploiting classes in Egypt. The Egyptian army is the main pillar of this reactionary and oppressive state. Let me elaborate. The Egyptian state is not a neutral mechanism that answers to popular wishes, nor is it a prize sought after by different interest groups, or an administrative structure corrupted by crony capitalists enriching themselves through government contracts. No, the Egyptian state represents and enforces the economic and social relations that I've been describing. It is the guardian of the property rights and an economic structure based on exploitation and subordination to imperialism. This state represents the interest of a ruling class that rests on exploitation of the great majority of the population. This is a ruling class that has evolved in relation to a certain kind of capitalist development that is highly dependent on imperialism. The army, the intelligence services, riot police, ordinary police, high courts, and the bureaucracy built up during the Mubarak era serve the interests of imperialism and the dictatorship of the exploiting classes in Egyptian society. The army concentrates the monopoly of legitimate armed force. It is the main pillar of a reactionary and oppressive state. And for almost 35 years, the Egyptian state, with the military as its principal bulwark, has been a keystone of U.S. imperial dominance in the Middle East. The state opened its airspace to U.S. warplanes during the Gulf War of 1991. It has given Western imperialism unimpeded access to the Suez Canal, After the so-called Egypt-Israel peace agreement was signed in 1979, Egypt has been an active accomplice to Israel's violent subjugation of the Palestinian people. The Mubarak regime helped enforce Israel's blockade of the Palestinian population in Gaza, preventing basic supplies from reaching people. Now, I said the state enforces specific property rights. It is legal for agribusiness to enforce its property rights, to buy up land and uproot peasants, to patent seed, to hire and exploit labor. But there is no right for people to eat, no right to decent shelter for the people of the world. There is no right for the 6 million people in Cairo who live in squalid subhuman conditions to change the priorities of society. There is no right to do that, and no amount of elections or referendums is going to change that. This is an economy organized around profit and subordinate to the workings of imperialism. If people try to change this situation, fight for real emancipation and break free of imperialism and all the oppressive relations of society, they will have to face this state that is carrying out this vicious repression and massacre in the streets of Cairo and in Sinai. They will have to face that state and a military that stands antagonistically opposed to the fundamental interests of the people and their liberation.
This is the Michael Slate Show, and you're listening today to a speech given by political economist Raymond Latta. Latta is also an advocate for Bob Avakian's new synthesis of communism. He writes for Revolution Newspaper, and he leads the website thisiscommunism.org.
Now, when Mubarak was removed from power, the U.S. imperialists relied on their influence and connections with the military to forge and push through some kind of transition that would preserve the Egyptian state and its regional role, and that could prevent the situation from escalating out of control. The U.S. was using its influence and leverage to reconstitute Egypt's status as an oppressive client state playing a certain role in the region. The reactionary Muslim Brotherhood and various pro-U.S. liberal bourgeois forces, like those grouped around Mohammed el-Baradei, were aiming to negotiate new arrangements and accommodations with the dominant fractions of the Egyptian ruling class. The U.S. was seeking to work with and to work through these forces. And something else was happening. The broad unity that had brought people together against Mubarak began to fracture and divide out. The slogan that had united them was, "The people want the regime to fall." But now that the regime had fallen, it was not clear where the struggle needed to go. There were general slogans and sentiments for freedom, justice, and bread. The spontaneous revolts that had seemed to unite the most active people against hated despots had, in fact, given rise to more complex and contradictory phenomena. In February of 2011, Bob Avakian issued a statement, and he said, and I quote, "The plans and designs of these oppressors are not what the masses desperately want and need. Theirs is the cry of freedom, and the struggle must be carried forward until real freedom is achieved. Freedom from the rule of the imperialists and their local henchmen and junior partners. Freedom from all forms of oppression and exploitation. Freedom from both the outmoded forces which would enslave women and the people as a whole in medieval darkness and oppression and exploitation, and from the outmoded forces who would enslave people in the name of democracy, freedom, and capitalist imperialist exploitation marketed as progress." But as Bob Avakian also emphasized, without communist leadership and a communist pole in society, people will not be able, in their thinking and in their actions, to get beyond the economic, political, and ideological horizons of the current world, of the bourgeois world, and all its oppressive relations. After Mubarak's fall, many activists joined with the Muslim Brotherhood to pressure the army to give in to the demand for a civilian government based on elections. When elections were held, it was no mystery who would win. The Muslim Brotherhood. And slogans were raised by some of the activists to rationalize this outcome. They raised the slogan, "Sometimes with the Brotherhood, never with the state." This self-justifying logic was that people could ally with and vote the Brotherhood to protect the revolution from the army. But the reality is this. The U.S. supported bringing the Muslim Brotherhood into the government not to destroy the state structure, but to save as much of it as possible. With the Brotherhood holding the reins of government, the U.S. continued to send economic and military aid. The Brotherhood inherited the role of the Egyptian state as a vital link in U.S. domination of the Middle East, and it acted in accordance with that. During its 1 year in office, it went further than Mubarak in keeping Gaza sealed off, most recently by dumping loads of stinking excrement into smugglers' tunnels, which are vital lifelines to the Palestinians living in the open-air prison in Gaza. Morsi continued to supply Israel with natural gas, gas that fuels Israel's militarized economy that rests on the forcible dispossession, subjugation, and lockdown of the Palestinian people. At the same time, Morsi acted to enforce the dictates of the International Monetary Fund. He ended subsidies for food and utilities that had been demanded as a condition for a $4.8 billion loan by the International Monetary Fund. This regime, like Mubarak's and like the interim military government in power, cannot meet the basic demands of the people. And Morsi's legitimacy came to rest more and more on pushing Islamization and force-feeding people religion. Morsi also tried to move his people into key posts in the state apparatus. As a result, tensions between the Brotherhood and the armed forces grew. This was an inherently unstable alliance, and so we see two things happening. On the one hand, popular protests began mounting against the regime. Millions took to the streets, decrying corruption, theocracy, and attacks on rights. On the other hand, the U.S. imperialists and their supporters within the state, and more broadly in society, especially grouped around liberal bourgeois forces like El Baradei, began to mobilize against the regime. There was convergence of interest involving the military, entrenched Mubarak loyalists within the state, rich business people who had established themselves during the Mubarak era, and broader sections of the people. The main grassroots movement was called the Tamarad, the rebel movement. It claimed to have gathered over 20 million signatures on a petition to force Morsi's resignation. But this movement accepted the leadership of the electoral opposition, the National Salvation Front. They chose as their representatives Hamdine Sabahai, a self-described leftist who supports free market economics, foreign investment, and Israel, and Mohammed El Baradei, chief leader of those who call themselves the liberals, rightly portrayed as the representative of the, quote, international community. The two men were sent to negotiate Morsi's ouster with the Supreme Council of the Armed Forces. The U.S. played a critical and decisive role. Not that it was behind every demonstration and outpouring, but it, the U.S., was the key force behind the coup at the end of June and early July, working through its diplomatic corps, national security advisors, other regimes in the region, and of course, the Egyptian military. People can read the coverage in revcom.us to learn more about the details of this coup. Yet in the face of incontestable facts, a grand narrative of people power has emerged. People proclaimed, it was not the army that took over, it was the army that acted in behalf of the people. This great self-delusion has taken hold among millions. It is the delusion of people power. Phase one was the ouster of Mubarak. Phase two was the demand for elections. Phase three is the ouster of Morsi. But now, with this regime cracking down on the Islamic forces, carrying out this bloody slaughter, many people, it is very clear, who have embraced this military are now beginning to raise questions. Is this people power in action? Is this the price that must be paid to oppose Islamic fundamentalism? Slaughter of sections of people?
This is the Michael Slate Show, and you're listening to a very special edition of the show. This week, we're listening to a speech by political economist Raymond Latta that provides background analysis and orientation for understanding what has been happening in Egypt and the real revolutionary alternative that's needed. Latta is a political economist and advocate for Bob Avakian's new Synthesis of Communism. He writes for Revolution Newspaper and leads the website thisiscommunism.org. Now back to the speech.
This is the situation that is in motion, that is in development. It is a situation that is, at the present time, creating a whole new set of conditions in terms of the crisis in Egyptian society, in terms of the ability of the U.S., of the U.S. imperialists, to actually exert control over events. But there is this problem that people had deluded themselves into thinking that this regime, this coup that had taken place, was somehow in the interests of the people. And here I want to draw from the recent article in Revolution newspaper and revcom.us, millions of people can be wrong. The coup in Egypt is not a people's revolution. It says that because the masses in the millions are acting, it is not the case that whatever they are doing must be righteous, just, and ultimately in their interests. Now, millions may think it is a popular revolution, but that doesn't make it a revolution. The objective reality is that there was a coup carried out by the military, serving its interests and the larger interests of US imperialism. Masses of people, including in the millions, can be, and in this case are, confused, misled, and profoundly wrong. The idea that people must by definition be right is a particular and concentrated form of populist epistemology. Now, epistemology is the philosophy of truth and how truth is arrived at. This populist epistemology is an approach where truth is determined by what people think, that is, on the basis of public opinion. That is what defines reality. This method of thinking does not apply science to understand objective reality in its underlying workings and dynamics. It does not challenge, refute, and transform people's false ideas and ways of thinking that are out of sync with objective reality, and is very harmful. It leaves the world as it is. And this is discussed in this article in revcom.us. Now the question is posed, why are people thinking this way? To begin with, many were worried that the Arab Spring may not have accomplished anything since the removal of Mubarak. The Brotherhood rode to power, the situation in society has actually worsened, the military is still in command. So people are taking comfort in the illusion that there is some transcendent will of the people that is setting the course of events, that is more powerful than the military, the police, or entrenched religious and economic forces. But there is no abstract will of the people. Elections carried out by the ruling class do not express the will of the people, but actually shape the thinking of people and maintain the legitimacy of the system. There is the illusion that people in the streets are determining history. But what is happening and had been happening in the streets also reflects the dominant ideas and aspirations in society. You had the anti-Morsi mobilizations, and now the Morsi forces in the street and facing severe repression. Different class forces are organizing and mobilizing around agendas, programs, and outlooks. And the dominant ideology and outlook motivating people has not broken out of the horizons of the existing system of imperialism, its economics, its politics, and its values. There's been a second factor impelling people to support the military. Large sections of people, especially from the educated youth and middle classes, have concluded and have been swept into the ideological torrent that the main danger to Egyptian society and to the people of the world comes from Islamic fundamentalist forces. And so the military, where and when it opposes Islamic fundamentalism, is seen as a positive force in society. Again, this is willful self-delusion, and it is poisonous. People who opposed the military when Mubarak was in power have been consciously blinding themselves to the reality that this military is a defender of US imperialist interests in the region and a whole system of exploitation and oppression in society. And they're being led to embrace a reactionary program that strengthens the Egyptian military and that allows it to carry out the kind of slaughter that is taking place against the supporters of the Muslim Brotherhood.
You're listening to a speech given by Raymond Latta at Revolution Books in New York City just a little while ago, and it's about the current situation in Egypt. Latta's a political economist and writer for Revolution newspaper, and he also leads the website thisiscommunism.org. We're going to take a quick musical break and be right back.
Oh,
Welcome back. That was Bedouin Jam from Muhammad Al-Hassan Abu Abid. This is the Michael Slate Show, and you're listening to a very special edition of the show. This week, we're listening to a speech by political economist Raymond Latta that provides background analysis and orientation for understanding what has been happening in Egypt and the real revolutionary alternative that's needed. Latta is a political economist and advocate for Bob Avakian's new Synthesis of Communism. He writes for Revolution Newspaper and leads the website thisiscommunism.org. Now back to the speech.
Since the coup, that is before today's events, almost 500 people have been killed, 1,000 injured, and over 2,000 arrested. And today alone, we know that hundreds have been murdered and that thousands are being subjected to arrest. Now, sections of secular and progressive forces rejoiced when the military removed the Brotherhood from power and have been whipped into an aggressive patriotism. But what is happening today and unfolding in Egypt, as I said before, is now causing concern, is raising questions about what is the actual character of this military accession to power. And this is something that is part of a mix, you know, of debate and understanding in Egyptian society. The Brotherhood and other fundamentalist forces are, on the other side, gaining new legitimacy around a program, a reactionary social program. This is a terrible situation for the masses of people, and we need to pull the lenses back. Bob Avakian's analysis of the two outmoded provides a powerful tool for understanding this conflict and acting to change the terms of things. On a world scale, two reactionary forces are clashing politically, ideologically, and militarily. Each preaches an enslaving ideology. Each is a rival representative of the status quo. In bringing forward another way, Avakian has analyzed these dynamics. And I quote, "What we see in contention here with jihad on the one hand and McCrusade on the other hand are historically outmoded strata among colonized and oppressed humanity up against historically outmoded ruling strata of the imperialist system. These two reactionary forces, poles, reinforce each other, even while opposing each other. If you side with either of these outmoded, you end up strengthening both." While this is a very important formulation and is crucial to understanding much of the dynamics driving things in the world in this period, at the same time, we do have to be clear about which of these historically outmoded has done the greater damage and poses the greater threat to humanity. It is the historically outmoded ruling strata of the imperialist system, and particularly US imperialist. Why has Islamic fundamentalism taken hold so widely? First, the rise of Islamic fundamentalism is in large part a product of the workings of imperialism, including specific policies of the CIA in Afghanistan, where it backed and funded Islamic fundamentalists going up against the Soviet Union. But on a deeper level, imperialist globalization has caused tremendous upheaval and dislocations in the oppressed nations. The traditional way of life of tens and hundreds of millions of people in these societies has been significantly uprooted, but with no real positive radical alternative possible that really meets the needs of people within the framework of the world system. This is driving people to gravitate to extremes, and Islamic fundamentalism is organizing people according to an extreme version of traditional relations and culture. It offers masses of people a way for people to make sense of the world, to deal with the uncertainties and dislocations caused by imperialism, to have a glue that can hold life together. Islamism in general seeks political power to implement an all-encompassing vision and ideology that, while appealing to the most backward aspects of tradition being undercut by imperialist capitalist development, seeks to combine this dependency with the false solace of religion, the hypocritical charity of the mosque, and the social services to the poor in Cairo and rural areas, and the suffocating solidarity of the community of the faithful that abolishes critical thinking. And this fundamentalism cannot, nor does it seek to break with the world system. But we have to be very clear. Imperialism, whether we're talking about sweatshops in China, the environmental emergency, mass incarceration in the U.S., the ongoing genocide against indigenous peoples in Asia, Africa, and Latin America, these crimes of imperialism dwarf the aspirations, the greatest aspirations of these reactionary Islamic forces. But if you don't impose and instead fall into active or passive complicity with either the West, U.S. imperialism, and other imperialist or Islamic jihad, you strengthen them both in the vicious cycle where every drone attack that wipes out a wedding party in Pakistan serves to recruit more jihadists, and on and on. In Egypt, the vicious attacks on the Brotherhood will bring more followers into its fold. They will portray the conflict as one between the downtrodden on the one side and privileged apologists for Western imperialism on the other. The liberals claim that in the political sphere that they represent freedom, but this claim is undermined when they lost out in the electoral maneuvering and declare electoral contest no longer the great decider. They make the appeal to the streets, but now the streets are flowing with the blood that has been inflicted by the Egyptian military against a rival oppressive force. The Brotherhood used the elections as the means to an end, to ram through a program to reshape society on a theocratic basis. And so too the pro-Western liberals. The parliamentary system and elections serve particular ends to more fully integrate Egypt and open it up more fully to imperialist penetration.
This is the Michael Slate Show, and you're listening to a speech by Raymond Latta on the current situation in Egypt. Latta is a political economist and advocate for Bob Avakian's New Synthesis of Communism. He also writes for Revolution Newspaper. He's the author of American Decline, and he leads the website thisiscommunism.org.
Now, many Egyptians had seen Islamic Brotherhood rule as an immediate threat to their way of life. They want access to global culture. The web has special importance for them because it connects them to the world. They want to be able to express themselves freely, live their own lifestyle, and not be stifled. Well, they are right to consider religious rule unacceptable, but they need to understand that the ideology and political system promoted by the rulers of the imperialist countries represents a worldwide system of exploitation and oppression. Partly because of their privileged position, they are prone to a belief in the free market that has in fact crushed the vast majority of people, and the corresponding belief in Western-style capitalist democracy and its systems of elections, which have never brought basic change to Egypt or anywhere else. The rivalry between these competing outmoded ideologies and their political representatives is a major fault line in global society and a source of splits within the Egyptian ruling class. But this is not a neat and simple process of demarcation. The Egyptian army that Western imperialism relies on is itself highly Islamicized. And each tendency feeds on the other. The crimes of each drives people into the arms of the other. But humanity does not have to choose between these two unacceptable alternatives, these two non-solutions. What is needed is to bring forward another way in opposition to and to break out of the dynamic of McWorld versus jihad that dominates much of the world now, including Egypt. The world is a horror, but because of the work and leadership of Bob Avakian, chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party, USA, there is a viable and liberatory alternative. Bob Avakian has summed up the great achievements as well as the problems and shortcomings of the first wave of communist revolution. The Soviet Revolution of 1917 to 1956, and the Chinese Revolution of 1949 to 1976. He has drawn from different spheres, experience, the insights of different spheres of human endeavor, and closely studied major changes in the world. He has developed a new synthesis of communism. Avakian has brought forward a model of socialism as a vibrant and dynamic society. This is a society that can meet the urgent needs of the formerly oppressed, while at the same time unleashing unprecedented intellectual, artistic, and political ferment, dissent, experimentation, and initiative. This is a society in transition to communism, a world community of humanity, no longer divided into classes. Now, this re-envisioned communism is not some ideal construct. It is the only way out of the madness and horror of the present world and toward a world truly worth living in. It is the real world liberatory alternative to these two outmoded. This re-envisioned communism speaks to the actual and real felt needs of the great majority of world humanity. It corresponds to the direction that the world needs to go in and can go in. This new synthesis has put communism on a more scientific foundation. There is a method and approach for understanding social reality and how it can be transformed. This re-envisioned communism needs to become a pole in Egyptian society and throughout the world. The key is leadership, communist leadership. Where communist organization does not exist, it needs to be forged. People should read and get into this manifesto from the Revolutionary Communist Party USA, Communism, the Beginning of a New Stage. This is very critical, because as I said, where communist organization does not exist, it needs to be forged. And this document provides a framework for forging new communist organization, and this Arabic translation is extremely vital and urgent right now. It needs to get out widely, right now. It needs to become a frame of reference, right now. People's sights need to be raised to a far better world. People need to be engaging and wrangling with this, taking it up and struggling to forge leadership that in the midst of mass upheaval and upsurges can lead the millions on a conscious scientific basis to make genuine revolution. This vision of an alternative has to become a pole in society, a force of attraction in society. We have to be clear about what revolution is. It does not leave the reactionary state, army, exploitative economy, imperialist relations, and oppressive social relations intact. No, revolution aims to defeat and dismantle the oppressive structures and military structure of the old order. And on that basis, it sets out to establish a radically new and different state power and socialist economy, with liberating social relations and all aiming to serve the struggle to achieve a communist world without classes and social divisions and antagonistic social conflict. Now, I want to be very clear, because I'm speaking to a broad audience. The existing communist parties in most of the Arab world have nothing to do with communism, except in name. In Egypt, some so-called communists even served in the Mubarak regime. Now, a critical dimension of genuine revolutionary work is waging sharp ideological struggle in society and transforming the thinking of people as a key element in building a movement for revolution and accumulating forces for revolution. This means calling out, not conciliating with the two outmoded. The truth is, there can be no capitalism, enlightened or otherwise, that does not viciously exploit people, lead to impoverishment and destruction of the environment. The truth is, elections, parliamentary democracy, and the formal rights in oppressed nations that have not ruptured out of imperialist domination are quite compatible with the dictatorship of the exploiting classes in these societies. The truth is, there can be no Islam, no Christianity, humanistic or otherwise, that does not oppress women. A revolutionary movement has to be challenging people to cast off the shackles of religion, its appeal to supernatural forces and gods that do not exist, and that prevent people from understanding the world as it is and their capacity to change this world. It has to challenge the core values of patriarchy, domination, and enforced ignorance enshrined in belief, ritual, and custom. And let's not forget that Islam means submission.
This is the Michael Slate Show, and you're listening to a speech given by Raymond Latta about the situation in Egypt. Latta's a political economist and writer for Revolution Newspaper, and he also leads the website thisiscommunism.org.
A movement for revolution has to popularize and fight for a scientific understanding of the world and society. It has to be contending with other ideologies and theories, from religion to postmodernism. Now, there are many of the left in these societies, in Egypt, revisionist communist parties, progressive forces that don't want to go there, precisely because they can only conceive of adjusting the existing order rather than doing away with it. And so these forces don't want to rock the boat and risk polarizing things, strengthening political Islam, and alienating one or the other of the two outmoded. And we have seen right now what this means in Egypt, where one section of people supported the military in the name of opposing this other outmoded, and this is giving rise to this tremendous bloodletting that is taking place right now. None of these forces want to confront the oppression of women in society on the deepest, most profound level. None of these outmodeds. And a touchstone question in bursting the constraints of these two outmodeds is the emancipation of women. This is about unleashing the fury of women as a powerful force for revolution. The oppression of half of humanity is woven deeply into the central strands of oppression of class society. The freedom from oppression that women require, that freedom can only be achieved through the most radical revolutionary transformation of society. And taking up that question today as a touchstone question among the oppressed themselves, and as part of promoting new morality and new culture that can inspire people and fit people to make revolution to emancipate all of humanity, this is a highly positive factor on the terrain. Society needs to be ideologically and politically repolarized for revolution, because the world does not have to be this way. And let me say this, one of the lessons of history is that an advanced minority can play a disproportionate role in society, especially at moments of great social turbulence and stress, as is the case now. And it is especially crucial at moments when ideological clarity is sorely needed and when sights need to be raised. This is about transforming people's thinking and accumulating forces for revolution to emancipate humanity. You know, let's do a thought experiment. Let's rewind the tape and go back to 2009, before the upsurge of 2011, and before the slaughter that's taking place today. You saw that the Muslim Brotherhood was in opposition to Mubarak, and it had a following among the poor. You also saw that growing numbers of middle-class forces were becoming alienated from the Mubarak regime, but were looking for inspiration to the West, while various bourgeois liberal forces were themselves coming into opposition to the Mubarak regime. Now, having seen what happened since 2011, and how the outlook and interest of these two outmoded, representing two rival and mutually reinforcing representatives of imperialist dependency, have come to dominate the situation. Well, what was called for, if you rewound that tape? To tail one or the other of these two forces, or to work to establish a real communist pole that can begin to influence millions? And that pole needs to be forged. It is the only way to avoid this horrendous choice that is being imposed on oppressed humanity, to side with one of these outmoded or another. And as I said earlier, with the events that are taking place in the last few hours in Egypt and what is unfolding with this vicious assault, many people who embrace the military are perhaps now raising questions. And this too is creating more favorable ground to do the kind of work, the kind of political work that is called for. Now, as Bob Avakian put it in his 2011 statement, if you truly want to see the heroic struggle of the oppressed masses develop with the necessary leadership in the direction of real revolutionary transformation of society and genuine liberation, engage with and take up the emancipating viewpoint and goals of communism, and the challenge of giving this organized expression and a growing influence and presence among the struggling masses. Imagine a revolution and a new society that gears an economy towards meeting people's most fundamental needs, and that unleashes workers, farmers, youth, scientists, technicians, and others to develop the means to do this in an environmentally sustainable way. Imagine a revolution that puts an end to shantytowns, that aims to overcome oppressive divisions between town and country, that forges new ways of organizing and integrating agriculture and industry, and that creates a new fabric of urban and rural life in which people can cooperate, develop their individuality, and flourish. Imagine a revolution that takes aim at all forms of male supremacy and patriarchy, from the burqa to the thong and everything else. A revolution that recognizes the full humanity of women and knocks down all the obstacles, from the need for birth control and abortion to child care, to the unrestricted right of divorce, to breaking with the asphyxiating notions of gender, and that promotes women's participation in all spheres of society. Imagine a revolution that enables those who've been locked into poverty and locked out of the realm of working with ideas, many of whom are now being mobilized around the reactionary Islamic banner. Imagine a revolution that enables those on the bottom of society coming together with those who had more education and training, but whose aspirations and efforts have been thwarted by the mandates of capital and imperialism. Imagine those people learning from each other and all taking increasing responsibility for advancing society and the world towards human emancipation. Imagine a state power that, instead of aiding and reinforcing imperialism, has as its main priority promoting the advance of revolution in the world. Imagine a revolution led by a communist vanguard that is both clear on where all this must go towards communism, a world community of humanity, and also clear on the need to give space for and to foster and to unleash on a whole level unseen in human history dissent and debate, as well as great ferment and diversity in the arts and sciences, in culture, in music, in philosophy, morality, and politics. This is the revolution humanity needs. If in Egypt a revolutionary movement were to arise with sufficient force and influence to break the ideological vice grip of these two outmoded, and even more, if it were to succeed in making revolution and leading the masses to overthrow the old order and go on to create a new state power and economy, this would have incredible impact in the Middle East and on the world situation. It would help spur advances in other parts of the world, and these advances would in turn react back on the situation where the breakthroughs first occurred. People are agonizing over what is happening in Egypt. We are seeing the outcome of these two outmoded in collision with each other. We are seeing the outcome of the delusions of a people power that has brought a section of society that had aspirations to side with a military that is carrying out this vicious repression. At the same time, we are seeing a situation in which U.S. imperialism is facing new difficulties, new complexities. We cannot lose sight of the fact that the old order that is being torn apart at its seams, and this is happening very, very ugly, in a very ugly way in Syria, where the collapse of the old order is taking place through the collision of reactionary forces in a civil war. We can't lose sight of the fact that this old order was largely created by imperialists. And the imperialists are trying desperately to stabilize this situation. And today, this is what they're trying to do in Egypt. But they are not able to redraw the map of the Middle East. They cannot create a situation that is tolerable to the large majority of people, for whom life never has been tolerable. The imperialists and the local exploiting classes can offer no way out. The two outmoded are exactly that, reactionary outmoded. But there is a way towards emancipation, this new synthesis of communism. The challenge is to take this up as an urgent and comprehensive solution, to make it a powerful force in society and the world, in the world that is being torn asunder by these colliding social forces, by the stresses and strains of a world economy in crisis. This is the world that is weighing so heavily on the mass of humanity, but this is the world that can be transformed through revolution.
All right, well, that wraps our show up for today. You've just been listening to a speech given by Raymond Lada, political economist and advocate for Bob Avakian's New Synthesis of Communism. He writes for Revolution Newspaper. He's the author of American Decline, and he leads the website thisiscommunism.org. And this brings us to the end of another show. I'm your host and producer, Michael Slate. I want to thank my assistant producer, Henry Carson, and my production assistant intern, Jeffrey Pryor. And I want to thank each and every one of you for tuning in. If you want to write to me, you can at michaelslate@redfuture.com. Again, that's michaelslate@redfuture.com. And if you want to follow me, you can do so on Twitter and Facebook. We're going to go out now with a song dedicated to the California prison hunger strikers. The hunger strike has now been going on for more than a month and a half. And just recently, the California courts have ruled that the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation has the legal right to force feed the hunger strikers in the maximum security SHU units throughout the California prison system. Anybody with a shred of humanity has to stand up against this ruling and against any attempt to force feed these prisoners. As we've learned from Guantanamo, force feeding is torture. And a court ruling that these prisoners can be force fed is ruling that it's cool to torture them. And in the face of that, everyone has to stand up and let the prisoners know that we have their backs. We will not sit idly by and watch torture being carried out against these people who are fighting not just for themselves, but for everyone who comes behind them, for everyone who gets locked up in the dungeons of this system. So here it is. This is Fire of Freedom from Black 47.
Abandoned by your church, I watch you suffer. Now you're older than your years, but you still look beautiful, though you're fighting back the tears. You can break down my door, you can even strip search me. Never gonna take away my human dignity. Beat me, shoot me, flame keep on burning. Never gonna put out fire of freedom. When we were children, we thought we would be God's anointed, but the joke. For the sun, but I want you